Doing Coast 3 nights in a row. I don't get a chance to do that very often. Are you sick of me yet? Actually, that's a trick question. You were sick of me on Friday. So it's Ian Punnett on Coast to Coast. And I will give you a warning up front that there have been some power fluctuations. Not far from where I live, apparently, there had been some major power outages. And we got kind of like a temporary, it was more of a brownout than anything else. It didn't seem like it all got knocked out. And there have been a couple of odd pulses of power, one of which, while we were off the air, took us down for just a split second. I've got backup power, but it could complicate something sometime during the night. There have been lots of unstable sort of air masses that have come through because of a high amount of heat and humidity. So I think we're okay for the night, but just in case, I'm just giving you the heads up. It could happen that for a moment or two, you hear strange music or something else pop on Coast to Coast, but hopefully we'll be all right now. In fact, there's a lot of strange stuff you'll be hearing tonight on Coast to Coast. First, we'll start with some open lines, and you can call anytime you want. We'll start lining those up on Coast to Coast. And if you need the numbers, you can get them from the website right now. But the book tonight that we're featuring is from an author that spent 25 years working on the source material. So it's detailed, it's fascinating, and it's completely scientific. I offer that to you because there's a lot of people out there that tend to think that anything that might sound paranormal is parascience, and that is not the case. We know that. I mean, there are, you know, people who are uninitiated who have not caught on to the idea that there is a science to these explorations. It's not just stuff that people are making up because it's good campfire stories. But consciousness beyond life, the science of the near-death experience, is about a scientific book as you could possibly get. 25 years of research into patients that have expressed an experience during a cardiac arrest, during sudden death, in which then they were at one point later brought back to life. And these experiences are consistent. These experiences are life-changing for the individuals. It's not just a temporary thing. It truly impacts the way they live their life. And the doctor who conducted the study started off as a skeptic, and now he's completely convinced. 25 years of gathering information through a consortium of hospitals in the Netherlands, and we have consciousness beyond life, and it is as persuasive an argument as you're ever going to hear on the life after death experience, told, you know, to the doctor and to the researchers through people who have suffered a near-death experience. And we'll get to that next hour. You're going to be knocked out by the material in this book on Coast to Coast. Also, some interesting crypto news stories to get us started next, including an explanation on that very strange skull that they found in South America. It isn't what we thought it was, but it still isn't settled as to exactly what it is. Next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Well, if you've been following this story out of Argentina about a mysterious skull found, we have an update for you, plus some work done in Montana. And if you're following Coast to Coast on a subway in New York, good news. All of that here before we get to open lines on Coast to Coast. The update comes in the middle of the coasttocoastam.com website. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, you'll always find the latest news. Plus, you can look into Streamlink. Go back and check out last night's show on Coast to Coast with Mary Roach, Packing for Mars. She's always fun, and she was terrific in talking about her experiences as she was finding out what it was like to try to prepare for this upcoming Mars trip. We are going to send human beings to Mars. We haven't worked out all the details of how that's going to happen, but even as we speak, there is the Mars 500 experiment that's going on, And she tried to even qualify for that and then, you know, come back and write about it. But no such luck. She didn't make it through the first round. She tells the story of why. It's very funny. I don't know how many of us would pass the same test if you find out what I'm talking about. Go back and listen to the show last night, Mary Roach Packing for Mars, and you can pick that up on Streamlink. And you can find out more about Streamlink at coasttocoastam.com, where there is a link still up, I think, tonight for the book that I wrote, my first children's book. I wrote this book many years ago. We just couldn't find the right illustrator. And so it's kind of a fun book if you've got kids or grandkids or nephews or nieces or something. You can do a little early Christmas shopping. I don't know how many of these we're going to have. I wouldn't dare call it a limited edition, but you never know, you know, when it comes to books. But I hope you enjoy it. But right there in the middle of the coasttocoastam.com website, there's a photo of a skull. And this was of what some people thought of as perhaps a Bigfoot baby skull, or some way related to a mysterious hominid in South America. In this case, this skull that was found in Argentina still isn't fully explained, but it appears to be that of a monkey. It was shot by a rancher. The rancher says he killed the animal because the animal was pestering his farm birds. And he shot it, not knowing what it was, and it appeared to be the skull of a small ape or a small hominid. It turns out to be a monkey. So you can go take a look at it, find more on it there. They're still investigating because they can't figure out why that monkey was there. I mean, where it was and why it was there, that's still not an explanation. And maybe the fact that the explanation is mysterious is there to tell you that this is still a mystery. But that won't be the only thing that remains unsolved at this hour. If you go to coasttocoastam.com, you'll see a couple other great news stories. In fact, I was kind of hoping to get on George Knapp tonight. I had sent him an email because a little while ago he had sent me the story of a particular guy in Las Vegas who was shot by police. He had a conceal and carry license. He had walked into a store. Somebody had noticed his gun, suspected that he was there to rob it or something, called the police. The police show up. There is some kind of altercation, and the guy ends up being dead, walking out of the store. His girlfriend says that this was a murder, you know, that this was just crazy, that he hadn't done anything, wasn't trying to do anything, that all of this was just a police overreaction. Police said that he had made threatening moves. You would think the way to prove that one way or another would be to play back the tape from the parking lot camera, which the police still have and have yet to display. They say, I think, that there's a glitch in the system which prevents them from showing it. I don't know if I buy that. But the police have the videotape, and I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I just wish they'd show it one way or another. Could World War II have been avoided? That's you know, perhaps something which is a little easier to call. Yeah, it could have been avoided if Adolf Hitler hadn't invaded all of those countries. Well, there's another way it might have been avoided. There's the story at coasttocoastam.com of Michael Keough, who in 1919 saved Hitler from being kicked to death by a mob. Had he not done that, of course, we wouldn't have had World War II, one can assume, and I think reasonably can assume. Also, if you're in New York, congratulations. New York will now have a much improved internet and mobile phone service in the subways. 3 years in the making, Transit Wireless is set to begin on a project that will bring Wi-Fi and mobile service to the New York City Transit subway. So even more places for you to go and use your Streamlink. And archaeologists in Montana working on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation in northwestern Montana say they've uncovered a vast former hunting complex. This is where bison were stampeded over a cliff And then, you know, after they were killed on the ground, were shared by the tribe. This is from these cliff dives from over 1,000 years ago. It's a 9-mile long area. A well-preserved drive line system was used to funnel bison to their deaths, along with bison bones and the remnants of campsites they found at the base of these cliffs and hundreds of teepee rings. So it's there. It's, you know, just another interesting piece of American history. And of course, the very first place where Americans discovered that there really is no such thing as buffalo wings, or at least not the ones we think of. And let's get to open lines on Coast to Coast and find out for the rest of this hour where you're going to take us before we take you to a near-death experience you will never forget on Coast to Coast. Let's go east of the Rockies where Derek is in Biloxi on Coast to Coast to get us started. Derek?
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing? I got three things to say. I'll say it quick because I know there's time. I seen shadow figures, me and my family, and they would be walking all around, and we used to live on this graveyard. We didn't know it was a graveyard until we looked up on the internet, but
okay.
We would see shadow figures, and I also saw a UFO before, and me and my brother saw it, and it was like, I'd say about not even a yard from us, and we heard footsteps running by us, and our dog started chasing it, and we went the next morning and looked at it, and they had like footprints, and it was like a like two-toed footprint. And another thing is the oil spill. I live in Biloxi, and they have dead fish floating up in the water, and the local news is trying to say it has nothing to do with the oil spill, which I think is a big cover-up.
Well, you may be right. I don't know. I would think it would be in the best interest for the local news to report that it does have something to do with the oil spill. I don't know why they would cover that up.
I think because this is a tourist community, so they don't want to scare the tourists away.
Well, have the tourists come back?
Yeah, the tourists are there. I see them swimming in the water, but they should be warning people.
Wait. You saw a woman in the water. I understand that. But last time I heard, like a week ago, is tourism was way down to the Gulf Coast. Okay.
Oh,
so just having a woman back in the water doesn't mean that tourism is solved. But I would think it would be in their best interest to, you know, financially to make sure that BP continues to pay what they should pay for that. I'd be curious to see what more there is to that story. Although, you know, I mean, fish do die, but I can't believe that it's going to be as easy as this. Between the oil and then the dispersants that were sprayed on top of the oil, that there aren't going to be more fish kills. There isn't going to be a larger disruption to the food supply. Alaska gives us James west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast for open lines. James?
Hi. I just had some questions to ask. One is there, you know, I heard last night about this great big chunk of Greenland going into the water.
Yep. It's about a hundred square miles of ice, not of Greenland per se, but of ice.
Yeah. I also know that the ice down in Antarctica is coming off in great big chunks.
It has
happened. Wondering, has anyone set a timeline for, you know, an estimated how the sea levels are going to rise over the next, say, 5 or 10 years?
Well, okay, yeah, there have been lots of different opinions. It's a little hard, you know, to come up with a trajectory that everybody will agree on. But there's a feeling that the way that the melting is going now, whether it's man-made or whether this is a regular Earth cycle, let's take that off the table and just say, following the temperature trajectory, we will conservatively, I am told by a guest from as recent as 3 weeks ago, conservatively, we will see the oceans rise by 3 inches in the next 50 years.
Well, thank you very much. At least I don't have to move immediately.
No, but 50 years and 3 inches, it'd still be devastating for coastal communities. So that 3 inches doesn't sound like much until you start doing extrapolations from that. And
And I'm not very far from the Kinnick Arm. The water will be up in here if it comes up a half an inch.
There you go. Well, thank you, James. The story is... that that it could go as much as a foot within 100 years, and that would be you know, that when you look at the way that waters flow along coastal areas, it would be impossible to say save New Orleans, and for that matter, you know, it'd be devastating for cities like Miami and other places that right now aren't currently being threatened. The chunk of ice he was talking about was in the waters of Greenland. It was from a couple of days ago. It just took a while to report it. It's 4 times the size of Manhattan, contains enough fresh water to supply the entire United States for 120 days. It's the biggest Arctic iceberg in about 50 years. So that's not insignificant. Now, whether that's just another thing, you know, and then it doesn't happen again for 50 years, it's fine. But the problem is in the repetition and the size that they're coming. These icebergs are breaking off faster and larger. If that stops, and it could stop tomorrow, then we don't have a problem. If it doesn't, we do. We go with the first-time caller line. Stephen is in North Carolina on Coast to Coast. Stephen?
Yes, sir.
Hey, where are you going to take us?
It was July 5th or 6th, and I worked third. And I was taking my break outside, and I was just happened to look up by the moon and seen a star that kept sliding back and forth from around the moon. And I thought that was kind of odd. And about 5-10 minutes later, I seen 3 or 4 jets start chasing this thing. And next thing I know, it went away. But later on that evening, about 4:35, just as you could see daylight coming up, it popped back up. And as the you could see dawn breaking, the jet fighters come back out, and I seen it head straight for the light, and then it just a bright green flash. And I called around trying to find out if anybody else had seen it or heard about it, and everybody kept saying it was just a shooting star.
Well, I mean, you'd think with something like that going on around the moon that there would have been millions and millions of people that it would have looked up. But with all these, you know, Blackberries and iPhones, maybe everybody's looking down at their handheld devices at just the wrong time. Stephen, that's interesting. You know, there are stories that our moon might be a base of some sort. You know, it's hollow. It has a dark side from which it would be easy enough to go in or out. So that's one thing I would love to spend more time exploring, is whether or not it's possible to get into the very bottom of these craters in the moon. Now, some of these craters, they really haven't been able to determine how deep they go. I mean, they're almost like natural mine shafts that go into the center of the moon. And if there is no, you know, volcanic activity on the moon, if it's sort of a dead rock, you think that we could, that, you know, as cool as it is to be packing for Mars, to mention Mary Roach's book again, it would still be ultimately cooler to even just get some bright lights and some long ropes and, you know, or whatever types of devices you need, and start going into the bottom of these giant craters on the moon. So much closer, so much easier to get to. And just to find out what's there. If we're going to places just to find out what's there, why not that one? It's a good start anyway. By the way, melting icebergs and polar oceans, I've pulled up a story on that to give you a little bit more of the statistics that pertain to this giant iceberg that just came off of Greenland. It's still like hovering right by the coast of northern Greenland, but it could be making its way down into the shipping lanes, 4 times the size of Manhattan. Now, that's the surface square mileage. So if you looked at it as like 1 mile wide and 100 miles long, just think how long that would take to drive across one iceberg. I mean, that's just, that is it. It's just mind blowing. And this could be going into the shipping lanes coming up soon. We'll be tracking that story on Coast to Coast. Your open lines before we get to Consciousness Beyond Life, the science of the near-death experience, coming up on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Are you one of those people that believes that near-death experiences are just the dreams of the living, that they are merely experiencing some sort of fluctuation in their oxygen levels in their brain, which triggers these near-death experiences? Well, to use a phrase, there's an app for that. And Dr. Pim Van Lommel will be addressing that coming up. It's impossible to use that explanation for so many well-known, well-studied, scientifically proven near-death experiences. And the doctor will explain this coming up based on his own, 25-year study coming up after the top of the hour on Coast to Coast. Before we get there, though, let's get back to your open line calls next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Anytime we're talking about consciousness on Coast to Coast, it reminds me of the movie Inception, which I have seen only once. I will go see it a second time here coming up because I have so many conversations about Inception in one form or another. This is the Leonardo DiCaprio movie, and it's very enjoyable. There's some people that say the best way to approach the movie is just think of it as just a very creative bank robber movie. And it's really just a crime caper movie dressed up in this really kind of interesting existential way. But there are aspects of Inception that make me think about our guest coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. And it's going to be really hard not to talk about it because not everybody's seen Inception yet, and I don't want to ruin it. Steve is in Albany on a wild card line on Coast to Coast.
Hi, Ian. It's Steve. Your acquaintance up here.
Sure. Hi, Steve.
With the patents in Minnesota. Hey, before I get on anything, I wanted to tell you two things about the things you had said. Maybe three things. You remind me of the movie Contact, which was followed by the movie Sudafed and then Chlorotrimine. and you were talking about the difference between parascience and paranormal. This all has to do with your periscope.
Good. Excellent.
Okay. And the last joke is like we were talking about the guy who killed Bigfoot.
Yes.
Reminds me of the Peter Gabriel song, Shock the Monkey.
Shock the Monkey? Yes, right.
Shot the Monkey now.
Yeah, no, that would be now Shot the Monkey. Right.
Yeah, okay. Well, but the reason I called you
is but there's more. But there's more. Yeah. Go ahead. Encore.
Okay. I was listening to Miss Roach last night. One thing I was concerned with is you probably saw that I was follically challenged, and that would be what would the effects of zero gravity have on those that are follically challenged because it increases the blood flow.
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, they do have that research, and I haven't finished reading that part of the book yet. Packing for Mars. She may address that. I was just getting to that when I got distracted by other stuff. So I will look forward to finishing it. But they really have done a ton of the research on that, the zero gravity research on blood flow and body functions and all of that was going on up in the Vomit Comet. So thank you, Steve. Nice to hear from you. Say hi to everybody over at that cool 24-hour diner. Dave is in Cliffside Park. Where? Where's Cliffside Park, Dave?
Cliffside Park is in New Jersey, Ian.
Glad to have you.
I'm overlooking Manhattan at this very moment.
So are you? You're not. You're not.
And I didn't know it was open mic night on Coast to Coast.
Yes, it is every time Steve calls. Not bad jokes though. I gotta give him his propers on that.
Okay. Well, I've had two UFO sightings in my life. One when I was about 17, living in Westtown, Pennsylvania. It was a huge, well, first of all, my friend Jeff and I were attracted by these big beams of light scanning the ground. So we got out of my car, left in the middle of the road, car driving, our car running, and we ran out of the middle of this cornfield, and this huge, I mean, bigger than a few football fields, rectangle, flew over us. And I remember looking at the underneath of it, and I could see pipes and stuff. I could see very much detail. And we weren't drinking or doing anything illegal, but we definitely saw it. It kind of freaked us out a little bit.
Right. No, I would think that would qualify as a freak out experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, when your hair stands on end and you're under this huge thing, it was just freaked us both out.
Totally.
And then in 1988, I had a major sighting up here in New York, which was probably, I can't believe it wasn't made, didn't make the news, but myself and 500 residents here in Cliffside Park saw it. I called the police department. I said, look, I'm not drunk. I'm not stoned. I saw something really weird. And he says, you and 500 other people.
Right.
So I said, okay.
That's its own kind of comforting, isn't it, when 500 other people call? Then you know you really aren't crazy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then I called Teterboro Airport, which is the airport very close to me, which is the airport that John Travolta flies into all the time.
Right, and where the place where the jet that landed on the East River, right, or no, on the Hudson, was trying to land. Right.
Right, right. Well, also, I called Teterboro Airport. I said, let me speak to someone in the tower. So they transferred me in the tower, and the guy said, oh, yeah, those were ultralights. I said, that's a bunch of BS.
Yeah.
Made no noise whatsoever. And if you're telling me it was a squadron of ultralights, it would have been screaming with noise. So he goes, officially, that's what we have to tell you.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting. Well, you know, and that sounds a lot like the whole, Phoenix Lights thing where they were telling everybody it was just flares. Balloon flares floating above. Jen is in Brooklyn, not too far from Dave. Let's go to Jen on a wild card line on Coast to Coast. Jen?
Howdy.
It's open lines.
Hi. You know, you're so happy about this, and I'm so upset.
What's that?
How could you be so happy to sing about the cell phones in the New York City subway? Don't you realize you could get brain cancer from cell phones? Do you know that O.J.'s lawyer, his partner, said that the doctor said that he got the brain tumor right where the cell phone was? People don't realize that people who are weaker get sick from all that stuff. It really affects and makes you really tired. I'm going to have to stand in the by the staircase now. I even went down.
Jen, just so you cannot panic and you can feel okay. If you're talking about the reported cases of brain cancer caused by cell phones, that's because people hold the cell phones up to their head. That's the place where you hold it up to your head. If you're not holding a cell phone up to your head, why do you have to worry about it, and why do you think it's safer to be by the stairs?
No, because the radiation, I feel.
No.
If somebody's sitting next to
it's
me with
everywhere.
A cell phone, I can actually feel the radiation.
Well,
I'm that sensitive.
Well, I believe that you are that sensitive, but I think the good news is that if you want to not be worried about it, I don't believe just sitting next to somebody with a cell phone will give you cancer. I'm pretty sure.
No, but I'm not worried about the cancer. I'm worried about getting weaker.
Okay, or I don't really think you'll be getting weaker as a result of that. Do you work out, Jen?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then you're halfway to the cure right there. You're in good shape. We are being bombarded with waves anyway. I mean, the cell towers are out there. The fact that it'll now be in the tunnels, unless you thought of the tunnels as like the safe place to go, in which case I could understand why you're feeling invaded on that. Steve is also in New York on Coast to Coast on a wild card line. Steve?
Hey, Ian, good evening. It's good to talk to you again, man. I don't think
Thank
I can
you.
Top that call, but I'll try. I have a question. I missed last night's show, so I believe it was last night's show. I was reading on the Coast website about the D.B. Cooper case.
We did a little first hour hit on an update on D.B. Cooper, yep.
So I read the recap on the website, and then I went to the related link. It was a great article that I clicked on.
About the woman who saw the fireball and
the witness. And my question is why would the FBI, or who knows who this man is that came and threatened her, why would they do such a thing to a little old lady? Is it because they were embarrassed, because they were in a whole another area looking for this man when they should have been where she was kind of telling them where he fell out of the sky?
I think that's the inference.
is it more sinister? Do they want him to get away with this? Is there something that they're trying to cover up? And I didn't know if you discussed that with your guest last night, and I'd like to hear. So
we didn't
take my call.
No, no. And I'll just tell you, we didn't talk about any motives. What we did talk about was the fact that the FBI, there is a certain amount of ego, I think, involved with any criminal investigation. Everybody's human. And the FBI being as susceptible to that as any, perhaps even more. And the good news from last night's conversation with Galen Cook, who's this attorney that we've been talking with over the years, this attorney that we've been helping on Coast to Coast actively track down the man that is known to everybody as D.B. Cooper, the guy who actually flew under the name Dan Cooper when in 1971 he jumped onto a plane and was able to get away with the $200,000. We're coming up on the 40th anniversary, a year and change from now, for that jump. And Galen Cook is anxious to try to come up with the final proof, the final missing pieces to the puzzle, to prove that it's a guy named William Gossett, whose family was listening to Coast the night we were talking about it. And unlike other people who have been offered as potential D.B. Coopers, William Gossett's family had some very interesting, unusual pieces of evidence. And one of those led to a safety deposit box in Vancouver, which is yet to be breached. But if it contains any of the money from that jump, that would seem to be the real smoking gun here. But there was a lot of ego involved, as on the air here, just doing things on the phone, it would seem we were making more progress on Coast to Coast than the FBI was making in the way in which they were conducting their investigation. And who knows? I mean, maybe they'll find some way to disprove William Gossett. We'll be back at, you know, caller zero again, trying to find some help for Galen Cook as he tries to uncover who D.B. Cooper is, or maybe not. But they are cooperating more. The FBI and Galen Cook are now sharing evidence, which is good. And William Gossett is very much in their crosshairs. As to other people coming forward and saying embarrassing things, it would be consistent with the character of some of the investigators to think that they would want people to not make them look bad. That was an article from last night. You'll be able to find that on the webpage, coasttocoastam.com. If you go to past shows, you can link to that from there. Let's go to Gary, who's in Orlando on Coast to Coast. Gary?
Hey, how you doing, Ian?
Well, where do you want to take us?
Well, okay, I got a question and a real disturbing story.
Okay.
I'll go with the story first. I'm riding my motorcycle, and I'm wearing my my MC cap backwards, and I get stopped by a black and white, and I'm not breaking any laws. And this is kind of like about 1 o'clock in the morning. Police officer walks over to me, and he says, "Hey, how you doing?" I go, "I'm doing okay." He says, "Excuse me, but have you heard of UT4A? I go, "No, I haven't. What's that?" United Terrorist for America. And I mean, I said, "You mean you want me to become a terrorist?" He says, "No." He says, "What we're doing is when we see the Islamic ladies that dressed in there, I don't know what that garb is called, what they wear."
Well, a burqa covers the whole body.
Right.
A hijab just covers the head.
They take their photograph, the photograph of the vehicle, their license plate. They have a four set up car system with their radios. They follow them, see where they live, take a picture of it. And I said, "What's the point of that?" He said, "January 11th, there will be a mass shooting, killing of 3,500 Islamics, no matter if they're good or bad, just like they took out the World Trade Center." And I just looked at this guy.
And this cop is telling you this at random at 1 o'clock in the morning?
Yes, sir.
Why?
He wanted to know if I wanted to sign up and join up with this. That was the bottom question.
Okay, but I mean, without any indication from you that you were a killer for hire or that you were somebody who would be inclined to want to shoot innocent people just because you're wearing a motorcycle club hat?
I don't know his reason.
Well, I mean, does he suspect that you, I mean, were you, if you don't mind me asking, are you Hell's Angels? Are you
ex-Marine?
Are you you're a one percenter? I mean, what, why would he just look at you and go, oh, this guy may be likely to help us kill innocent people?
I'm wearing my ex-Marine lid backwards and I'm riding a motorcycle and I'm dressed, you know, so I won't get hurt. I've got all the garb on, and you could probably put me right next to a Hell's Angel, and I would look like I was dressed like one. And I'm riding a chopper. Hmm. That's my thing. Big deal.
Well, so it's a warning then that we should be aware that there's some sort of cobble of
underground law enforcement that has had it. Who've had relatives, from what I can gather, and they have just had it. And they are going to retaliate because the guy, the last thing he said is, the only way America's going to wake up, and he made that sure, he looked me right in the eye. He said, the only way America's going to wake up is when the second shoe drops.
Okay, so this would be one of those cases where you, as a motorist, I think I would be inclined to want to give this police officer a sobriety test. Did you ask him to walk a line, touch his index finger to his nose? I mean, that's just bizarre behavior that a police officer would do that. I certainly accept your testimony.
How much more of this is happening? That you know, that's what scared the heck out of me. Can I get to my other question?
Got to be quick. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. What would happen if on voting day, no one showed up and no one voted?
Yeah, that's we get the people we deserve, right?
They couldn't stay there if we didn't vote them.
Well, I mean,
change the system, but it would all be on for our side saying we want to change. We ain't voting for none of y'all.
Well, you're saying that absolutely not one person voted, or when you say we don't vote,
yeah,
we're
okay,
not voting.
With all of us, none
okay.
of us.
All right. Well, then I think there'd be, yeah, I don't know what the actual law provides for, whether that means that you are automatically kept as an incumbent or, yeah, I don't know. That's very interesting. Well, that its own kind of massacre. Well, thank you, Gary. That was Gary in Orlando, Florida. Being told that I've just gone on the net and I'm trying to find anything at all that says something like this is going to be happening on January 11th. Isn't that what he said? But I can't, but I don't know, at least if there are some people out there that are planning on the mass murder of innocent Muslims, just to try to prove a point. I don't think it's a good point. And I don't think, of course, besides being morally wrong, it's certainly not going to help the situation. Seattle, Washington, Ryan on Coast to Coast. Ryan?
BP is laying off thousands of workers in cleanup efforts in the Gulf, and people are beginning to kind of leave, and the cleanup effort is kind of coming to a halt.
Right.
And I don't understand this because everybody knows that all the corrects that they put, the corrects that they used was at the bottom of the ocean. So at this time, there's a massive lake of oil. Benzene, sulfide underneath the Gulf. I don't know. It seems to me that everybody thinks that it's all over with. There's no more oil left. It just magically vanished, disappeared.
Right. Well, I don't know that everybody believes that, but I do know they sent divers down to try to find that, and they haven't been able to find it yet.
Well,
I mean, you would think it's there. It makes sense that it's there, but I know, you know, last couple of stories I've looked up, they say even divers haven't been able to find anything yet. But we'll keep looking. It's got to be there somewhere. It just doesn't go away. I mean, that's the sick thing about this slick. It's lurking. That reminds me, Vaccine A coming up soon on Coast to Coast. That'll be coming up this Saturday night. You want to hear this. And on the 21st of August, don't miss our the first ever debate we've ever had about 9/11. Now, we'll tell you more about that coming up next. And then we'll get into Consciousness Beyond Life, the science of the near-death experience on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.